Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connection Sunday edition. Today's date is the 14th day of June, 2009. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you all here with me for this most important of broadcasts. Got a great show lined up for you on this Sunday night. Of course, with my returning Sunday night guest and commentator on world events, Ognir, and my regular guest on the French Connection, Mohamed Rafik. We got a lot to talk about, not only about the events that are taking place in America with this new hate crimes push and this what has now come out in the minds of just about everybody, this false flag terror attack done by probably Mossad, CIA, slash who the heck knows, with an 88-year-old, and then this recent elections coming here in the European Union. We want to talk about what's happening in Ireland with the Lisbon Treaty. So many subjects, and they're all very important to both the French Connection's listeners and myself, and my friend Noel, and of course Mohamed Rafik. So I'm going to bring them up one here. Mohamed, are you with me?
I am indeed. Good evening, though.
It's great to have you back on here on the French Connection, Mohamed. And Noel, are you here with me?
Yes, evening, Daryl.
Great to have all of us here on the same line. This is really an unprecedented broadcast here because we have the corners of Europe covered with this show. People from all disparate parts of Europe are going to be discussing this. So I'm going to go right to you, Noel, on this one. The recent declaration by Sarkozy that he and Angela Merkel are going to jet over to Ireland and force the yes vote coming up this autumn for the Lisbon Treaty is nothing short of a challenge for us to stop them, in my view. What do you see is happening on this Lisbon Treaty vote in Ireland?
Well, Daryl, first of all, I hope that he brings a bigger stool the next time so he can kneel up on it and we can actually see him. This is our little Zionist president. Listen, if the two of them do come over and try to push Ireland through this Lisbon Treaty, I hopefully we'll have an even bigger group that will get behind the Eurosceptics at the present moment in time and fight these people, because there's no way this is going on. But however, Daryl, it's possible, you know, mention Sarkozy is coming over to Ireland could be putting a fox in with the hens, sort of, because Ireland has no love for this guy. And why would he bother coming over? I mean, Merkel come over, it'd be an insult.
Well, it has been in the past, but they've got their fifth column organizations working their dastardly deeds over there. And you remember me talking with Sinn Féin about interviewing Mary MacDonald and what happened with that. As soon as I brought up the common purpose discussion, they sent me in no uncertain terms packing. And of course, Sinn Féin is supposed to be the voice of the people, but in my experience talking with them, they were anything but that. What's your take on what they're doing?
Daryl, I think, if we tie it in with what's going on in two other Zionist control cities, London and in Washington, you have all the last Lisbon Treaty, all the politicians were for it, all of them bar one. We're actually for it. We've seen the recent shenanigans going on in the UK over all the extra money these politicians are getting, and it's exactly the same thing going on in Europe. And if we can enlighten the Irish people into this European politicians going over and voting on straight bananas and all of this, while at the same time they're pocketing thousands and thousands. For example, an Irish diplomat has 5,000 francs a month travel allowance, which is four flights to and from Brussels to Dublin normally. These guys are getting Ryanair flights and cheap flights at 65 quid and 99 quid, and they're pocketing the rest. It's all a scam. London, we've just seen them. I'm sure Mohammed will have a lot to say about that. They're buying manure and they're buying this, and the Irish people, as soon as they realise that the politicians are not representing them in Europe, that it's a big old boys club and a couple of staunch feminists like Merkel in there, that it's going to be a scam, and that will work to our advantage, hopefully.
Well, I think you're right, and Mohamed, I want to go to you on this. The UK population would not accept Europe as designed by the criminals
Daryl,
in Brussels.
Daryl, if I might just add in before Mohammed goes in there, it's very important that you know, there's a long rivalry between the Irish and the English, but this is too important to have little minor arguments over stuff. Now we need the British people, Scottish, Welsh, the Northern Irish and the English to absolutely support the no vote in Lisbon, which will be taking place in October. And because if Ireland signs up for this, the UK, the English people and the Scots and the Welsh are not mad Euro lovers in the first place. So they better join up with us to get this no vote. Because if we get a yes vote, then the UK will go along with this Euro nonsense, and they'll have a second Zionist frontier in Europe, an official Zionist frontier in Europe, as they do in America. Mohammed.
Well, Nam, you know, one of the things is that by getting Britain into this thing, they're kind of clandestinely or backdoor allowing the Commonwealth into it, and they're allowing this Zionist European superstate to project itself beyond the borders of Europe through the connections that Britain has worldwide. But the British public didn't want this. So what did they do? They did exactly what they did to the French. They took the vote out of the French public's hands. They did the same thing in Holland. They said they didn't want it. And instead, their elected representatives betrayed the people in both instances. And now they did it in Britain the same way. They Gordon Brown betrayed the public. What is your take on all this?
Well, I think that, you know, therein is the rub. It's very clear that on the ground, the people from the Republic of Ireland, Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales and England are all generally aligned in the same direction. The people on the ground, they're quite sure they don't want to be politically aligned. They're happy with economic and monetary union with Europe. We're not saying that we're actually Europhobes and frightened of Europe by any stretch of the imagination. What we're saying is, you know, at what level should we be engaged together? And we think, you know, making things fair financially is a good idea. But politically, we've always been against that. And what you'll find when you go down the history, go all the way back to Margaret Thatcher, and you start saying, well, what about the sentiment of the British people? Since Margaret Thatcher till now, the British public have been calling on government for a referendum.
That's right.
That's part of 20 years on the matter of political union. And every time the government goes and does the old census testing, the old toe in the water to see what sentiment is like, it's always 70 to 80% against.
That's right.
And what we have, as you say, Darrell, is the politicians eventually have realised that the British people, the people who voted them into the positions, don't want this. And consistently now, over two generations, almost, don't want this political union. So they short-circuited it, removed from us the democratic right of voting in a referendum, and just tried to force it on us, and they did the same thing, sadly, also with Ireland. The people on the ground are not only aware, they're very aware, and these last round of Euro elections, we saw the UK Independence Party, which has never really been heard of before now. Maybe, you know, you're talking like less than 1% of the vote and a long way below 1%. Suddenly get 16% in the UK over Labour, who only achieved 15%. The British people are now saying, we want a different form of government. They don't know what government yet, but what they do know, especially with the corruption which has come to light recently, which I make the point, Darrell and Noel, that the newspapers and the intelligence services have known about for the last 12 years, why they've decided now to start releasing all of these frauds and tax evasions and fiddles is beyond me, but they've known about this for a decade or more and turned a blind eye. But they themselves have decided that maybe it's gone too far, I don't know, and they've leaked all this stuff to the newspapers and totally destroyed the credibility of the British government. But not that it wasn't already destroyed in the eyes of people. This has only served as a confirmation, in my opinion.
Darrell, I'd just like to add in there. I think, you know, I've been to the UK, although I wouldn't go to the UK, as long as it's controlled by Zog, I wouldn't go there anymore. But I have been to the UK maybe 50 times in my life, and I know, you know, I love going to London and Scotland and all over the place. But One thing that has to be taken into consideration when we're talking about the British people, which are, you know, different clans, whether they're Scots and Welsh and English, they're not the same, they do things differently. But one thing they will agree on is they got a real kick up the arse last year when they had to go run to certain banks, that they had runs on banks, and they got most people lost about 40% of their income. House prices are still on the decline. The British people are wide awake that there's something going on, and as Mohammed said there, you know, in the last round of elections, the vote was definitely against the leadership, Zionist leadership in the Commons, or over the Commons, to be more probably correct. And there's something up here. And we have an opportunity here if we can educate these people. But they need to know that, you know, time is against us, and we need the support of the British citizens in Ireland. And there's lots of British people in Ireland to get this no vote passed again for the second time. Because there's nothing they can do. I mean, we've told them once, but this is, you know, typical. Well, we know you voted. No, this goes back to Palestine. The people are asked to vote, so this is what democracy is. You can vote for A, B, or C, or whatever it is, and you vote for C or Z or whoever you want. You vote, and then they say, "Well, that's not the right choice." And this is exactly where we are now. So Mohammed said the British people want a change of type of government, not change of government, putting in another Zionist friend of Israel, Cameron. They want something completely different.
Well, I agree with that. In fact, as it's starting to suss out here, the way they're going to do it is to bribe Ireland into it. They're trying to say right now that you know, we'll bail out your banks, we'll bail out your high street, we'll bail out your industries, we'll give you the dole, we'll do all these things for you, and stave off utter disaster in the country. Now, what we're talking about in Ireland, a lot of people don't know this, is Ireland by world standards is no more population than a large city. We've got 4.5-5 million people, and but that 4.5-5 million people could be the savior of the entire European continent at this point. So they know it's for all the marbles, and these people are going to pull out every stop they can to try to manipulate this. And I'm wondering what kind of things are in their arsenal to try to manipulate the vote in the last instance. Unless, of course, didn't they try to get some electronic voting passed in Ireland? Oh, no,
they didn't. They ran out of money, Darren. They wasted it. Another one of these frauds that by the time they pulled the plug on the scheme, they'd already spent 56 million euro on it. So it's just one of these scams, you know, with recession going on, they're paying out some of their friends. These people will be back with their black box voting is coming. It might be in the next, I don't know whether they can get it in for the Lisbon 2 in October, but if we do get the black box voting, we're screwed.
Well, that comes out to 10 euros spent for every citizen in Ireland. Every human in Ireland. That's astonishing. Mohammed, look, the financial side of this has gone over the cliff. We talked about this so many times, and Noel's very very adept at the subject. We've seen the bond market go toast here. We've seen the spreads change, but then there was a recovery on some of the spreads, and I saw a manipulation. I saw intervention. I saw lies coming into the marketplace. A lot of people saying green shoots, green sprouts, this and that. The fact of the matter is that when you take a look at the bullion market, this is the best indicator of how bad things are. The ETFs, the exchange-traded funds, seem to be fully in the hands of the crooks. But the bullion market and physical gold purchasing has not abated. In fact, it's off the launch pad and going crazy right now. And a lot of people are starting to call for COMEX delivery, which is a nightmare for these people, because if everybody asks for delivery on COMEX, they won't be able to deliver. What's your take on where we are on the financial malaise and how they're going to keep their bases covered in these last days?
Well, the interesting thing there, of course, is how this ties in also back to trying to bribe the Irish people, for want of a better phrase. I think that obviously the power powers that be are trying to cut deals with the Irish government. But when we go to the proverbial war chest, Darrell, it is actually empty. And thanks to the conduct of both the European Central Bank and Gordon Brown, there's actually not any gold coins in the bottom either, because those all got traded off for dollars some time ago. So I'm wondering what they are planning to offer the Irish government as some kind of support to try and get them to win the vote back of the people. I don't see them having the mechanism for financial intervention. So, when it comes down to it, they've only got the political whip. There's no money there. And the Irish people, are far from being foolish, going to be looking at the situation and saying, well, this whole euro business for us has been a mirage, and a mirage with pain to boot. The property prices at one point in the Republic of Ireland were so bad for people living there, although it looked great on paper, the practical reality was that, newly wedded couples couldn't afford to get a home together. People couldn't afford to live in their own economy. And I think that, basic wisdom of, well, whatever was going on, it was wrong, obviously. Now it's collapsed. We don't want to go back to it. And I think that's the key point here, that they can go to all kinds of dodgy technology. But I think the Irish people recognise, what we had was a bubble and burst. But also, the bubble itself wasn't pleasant for many people. And being a genuine peoples, I don't believe they want to go back there. So you're going to have some seriously dodgy software, to miscount worse than Florida in order to make those numbers make it look like the people are supporting it. I really believe that the Irish people now, they just want to go back to that which is safe, that which was good for families and supported family growth, and gave them a good standard of living. They always had a good standard of living. I've visited Dublin on more than one occasion, although I don't remember exactly. But that was due to self-inflicted circumstances at that time. But from what I do remember of it, it was a lovely place to be. And I remember thinking how sad it was that I was reading in the papers a few years back about young couples, getting both working, the old dinks, double income, no kids, two incomes, and still couldn't afford to buy somewhere to live. It was ridiculous.
Well, here's what happened, Mohammed, and this is interesting, because they had still in the 70s, and Noel will probably confirm this, an agrarian kind of economy where a lot of people lived in the countryside. There were still, there was a lot of unemployment, but families were tight-knit. There was a lot of sharing going on, and a lot of good ideas coming from how to survive through a family structure. And what's happened is they've inflicted the American style on them, where everybody is trying to get ahead by not working and making money. Everybody in the world, if you ask an American young man what they want to do for their career, they tell you they want to be rich. And see, this sickness has been spread around the globe, and Ireland caught a bad dose of it, being that they had very close ties to industry out of America, such as Dell Computer and others. And now that the rug has been pulled out, and people have to go back to their cottage industries and their roots. Now, from what I know, Noel, and you probably confirm this, Ireland during your youth was not wealthy, but it survived with tight-knit family structures. Am I correct?
Absolutely, Darrell. I mean, in the 70s, I left Ireland in 1984, 85, and it was 21% unemployment, and that's what I was facing. I was 18, 21%. You hustle for some work. Going back into the 70s, one of the biggest things to notice, if you look at the demographics of Ireland, is we had big families, large families still in the 70s, 8, 9 kids, and then you have Mohammed Tom with the dinks, these double income, no kids, and that's exactly what happens. So, but if we look into it, nothing happens for no reason. The overall takeover, a Zionist control takeover of the European Union, just getting it all into one block, was never going to be done in a day. This has been in the planning stages for several years, good few, maybe 30, 40 years, that it would take some time, a typical ploy. And here we come up, you know, who knows that they have decided many years ago that they get this one of the smaller countries like Ireland, 4.5 million population, to vote for, you know, 370 million to accept the European Charter, European Constitution, which will remove our rights. That Ireland was deliberately built up in the late 80s and 90s, brought in all these American techniques of no one works anymore, you just keep buying and speculating on homes, and you need to get two homes, and then you can, you know, get renters, and you speculate, and the price is going up, and you can't do anything wrong. I mean, that bubble was obviously, Darrell, going to burst if anyone with half a brain was looking at it. But the problem was, Ireland got a dose of bad medicine, a dose of Zionist capitalism, of usury, of banking shenanigans, which is exactly what the government are now finding out after nationalising several of the banks, and basically the Irish government are now running all the banks, and the problem is still going to get worse. I've seen there was a castle there sold. They've been trying to sell it now for 2 or 3 years. They got, I think, 2.4 million for it the other day. It's a big castle, Darrell, restaurant and bed and breakfast and the hotel, the whole lot, and beautiful grounds and everything. This is up for 6.8 million 2 years ago for sale, and they couldn't sell it. It went down by 60% before they could sell it. So that's where Ireland is now, and you know, they're digging down, and they're going to have to make some cuts and whatever. The thing is, again, you know, the politicians were going to get in Fianna Gael after Fianna Fáil, and they'll make arrangements with Sinn Féin and the Green. Well, the Green Party won't be there because they were in government and they got kicked out, basically. And we're going to go back to the same. Ireland is in a very, very vulnerable position, that the bankers, these Jewish bankers, can come in, you know, whether it be the IMF, which is the same guys who are running the World Bank and
Yeah, Zolik and Strauss-Kahn, the World Bank and IMF. Zolik and Strauss-Kahn running them, yeah.
Exactly, Darren. This guy can come in, or not, maybe not him, but one of them said, listen, this is the plan. This is it. The media is an all-out blitz for a yes vote in October, and we'll accept nothing more. If you come up with a no vote, you're gone. You're history. You're toast. No more credit. We won't give you the 20. Ireland needs 20 billion a year. The government needs 20 billion a year to survive for their programs and, you know, works and repairs and health care and whatever. 20 billion. And we're now in a very, very vulnerable situation that some Zionist in Europe can say, or in Washington say, well, Ireland better play ball or they're toast. So, I mean, we're facing being toast for making the right decision, Darrell.
Well, that's exactly what come, and we're going to go into this right now. And this has something to do with the financial system, and Mohammed, you have a lot of knowledge about this. The American bond market for municipals, munis, as they're called in the American market, but these munis have been peddled worldwide, and they're in portfolios globally. They've gone belly up. They used to be risk-free in many people's minds. I mean, AAA plus, even. And they're from big cities all the way to states, all the way to the federal government, and there isn't a municipal or a bond in the United States that has not, in the real world, become worth less. Now, the fact of the matter is states are facing bankruptcy, cities are facing bankruptcy. What do you see as the knock-on effect? Well, first of all, give me a rundown of what you see in the bond market, Mohammed, and what's the knock-on effect for the bond market and the gilts and the rest of the world's, you know, the Deutsche markets that are coming out of Frankfurt. What are we talking about here?
What we're talking about at the core of this is, as these bonds are downgrading in quality, remember these, we keep going back to the story on the French Connection of the capital ratios, the solvency ratios for banks.
Yeah.
Something which was a muni would hold a AAA rating historically, which means that it could be held against Tier 1 capital. As soon as it drops below that, it goes to Tier 2 capital and maybe even Tier 3 which means that the banks have got to find yet more money to balance the books. When they were doing the old new lamps for old bit from Mladin, you know, what they were doing was getting rid of all the junk, say, subprime, and swapping those out, getting the US government to buy them back, often on the repos, short-term purchases, and then using that to buy quality bonds like the munis. What we have is an ever-shrinking arena of bonds that can be used for capital purposes.
In other words, that their whole Tier 1 structure has eroded down to... I'm going to challenge you, Mohammed. Tell me a single Tier 1 relationship that's still unscathed in this world. And maybe Switzerland's bonds are still good, but where are we now on the bond market? We're talking about everybody's bond, because everybody's linked in with... Even Switzerland holds a lot of this paper. Everybody's holding some of this bad paper in their Tier 1 capital formation.
Well, the interesting thing is that historically, say, for Switzerland, the position of the what are known as the cantonal banks has been ignored. But the cantonal banks, which are, if you like, the state banks or the county banks, would normally issue cantonal bonds, and they, even though their solvency ratios were rubbish, I think there's only two states, two cantons in the whole of Switzerland that run such a tight ship that they can genuinely bail out their bonds, one of them being Zurich, and I think the other Geneva. All the rest of them are all in dodgy positions, but everybody has this view that the Swiss government would bail them out. Those bonds, people are also looking at them not only because they're low rate payers, but because people are having to do solid analysis and say, you know, there's nothing in paper that says the government will bail these bonds out. That's never been the guarantee. Same in the United States. People are having to actually go to paperwork that they've never looked at before. You know, let's pull out the Constitution and see if the government has to bail this stuff out. I mean, they're reaching ridiculous positions. So we're now saying that, yes, the only stuff that is callable for Tier 1 appears to be still US, UK, Euro, Treasury stuff. But everybody knows that even that's not real. There's got question marks over all of that. So what we've got, what we're on the verge of and we're getting nearer to every day is a total solvency meltdown. The only thing that a bank will be able to hold, in reality, will be cash and nothing else. And that means that they're going to have to soak up yet another round of cash, because the bonds that they bought with the cash that they got last time have all turned into rubbish.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what we're saying here is that this monetizing that they're doing from central banks, both in Britain, Europe, and America, are going directly into the bank's coffers in order to bail out their Tier 1 relationships that are going south.
That's what they had. All the bailouts money so far in helping the banks out had been to cover those positions and keep that solvency ratio, whatever it is according to their own mathematics, in ratio. There's got to be so much cash versus so much lending. That's the, you know, in a nutshell, that's what it looks like. But the cash, they've had permission from the Bank for International Settlements in Basel. The cash, cash, what's as good as cash? US Treasury bonds, US municipality bonds, Swiss cantonal bonds, Swiss government bonds. So anything that had this AAA sovereign look, and even very big corps. Another classic, General Motors. General Motors was something that was classed as Tier 1 capital not that long ago. It was as good as cash, but now insolvent. They're being broken up. So where does this leave us? It means the banks will be knocking on government door for yet another round of cash, because otherwise they are going to have to rebuild the way of General Motors. They're going to have to cease trading because they are insolvent yet again, but this time the government government's got no money left. And even though people might be threatening Ireland, you know, Noel, they might threaten them because Ireland needs $20 billion a year. Actually, compared to the size of the bank losses, $20 billion is small potatoes. And they're going to be saying to the IMF, well, can you come up with $60 or $70 billion to help us out in the short term? And if the answer to that is no, well, why bother? You know, we just say to them, well, if you can't give us what we need, why on earth are we going to try and fiddle the vote? It's a waste of time, because people are going to vote us out anyway, because our banks have failed, even though we've nationalised them, because this solvency ratio now, Noel, because the banks have been nationalised in the Republic of Ireland, the government now has to put that cash in. So the government now has to take even all the Tier 1 capital stuff that they had that's just melted down in the past 3 months. The government's got to put cash there.
Absolutely.
Legal, that's a European legal requirement. You know, they talk about voting into Europe. This is a legal requirement for the European regulators to manage to have these capital ratios there. The government's going to have to steal yet more tax money off the taxpayer in the Republic of Ireland to balance the books of the banks they've nationalised. And they've realised they've made a massive rick. Rather than actually letting some banks fold and keeping the cash to keep two or three banks going, they now have to balance it on all of them, which is an absolute farce.
Impossible.
Well, I'm sure, Noel, you have a question for Mohammed regarding some of this stuff.
I'd like to read a comment. Sorry, Dad, I went to get my dog's rabies vaccinations the other day, and my reading glasses fell off, so I'm a bit blind here. I'm trying to read something here. But it's something, it's a comment from our buddy George Soros, and he's talking about CDSs as instruments of destruction, and he made this quote. He says that the bondholders with CDSs, like those of General Motors or Government Motors, get more benefits on bankruptcy than on reorganization. In his own words, it is like buying insurance on someone's life and owning the license to kill them. And I was wondering what Mohammed thought of that as a quote.
Well, but before you go into that, I want to make a caveat statement here that this is coming from one of the biggest CDS swap manipulators and criminals that has ever walked the earth, and he's an agent for the Rothschild banking interests, and always has been. But that being said, Mohammed, what do you got to say about that?
Well, of course, one of the nice things about having insurance on a bond, I remember meeting a very Wild West type of American from a Wild West type of financial house in America many years ago. I had a very low reputation, but they were very, very good fun guys to be around, if you like. And he told me years ago, he said he specialized in Mexican bond dealing. And he was always going out buying bonds which were failing. That was the main thing. And I said, what do you mean you're buying bonds that fail? He said, because they're insured. And he said, we're going for the insurance payout. He said he was making, I think at the time, maybe 400 to 500% returns, because he was buying bonds that were only trading at 20% of the face value. And then when they went bust, he was knocking on the insurance doors. So this is there are people who like Soros and Co. who don't like that. They consider that to be unfair, whereas this guy was obviously quite shrewd in his purchasing. This is very well-known stuff. If you've got bonds that are insured by insurance companies that have still got cash, because the issue here, of course, Noel, is that you've got to make sure that the person that you're insured with can afford to pay out.
I hope it's not AIG.
Greenberg.
AIG, yeah. I wouldn't be too reliant on getting cash from them, but the point is that this is another round of hits, Darryl, because there are people holding insurance policies on GM and other big bonds that are going to be knocking on insurance doors, and AIG has been bailed out like no insurance company in history, more than $300 billion so far, and now all the bondholders in the failed General Motors, if AIG insured them, would be knocking on their door saying, we'd like $60 billion, please. And AIG won't have it.
Yeah, well, and Darren, this looks very bad for General Motors. I mean, they were making crappy cars anyway. I'm not so sure a reorganization from government motors is going to do anything. But I think the whole system has been that rigged. Mohammed is an expert on it. I've been learning over the last few years. But this market has been rigged, and they've set their timers. Although even as the market plummets down, they're still getting kickbacks. I mean, billions and billions. I mean, they're betting the more companies that fail. There's no insurance company with any money, and then they'll move back to Israel or wherever they're going to, and the rest of us are going to be stuck.
Well, it's worse than that. Let me try to give you a little snapshot here. There are a handful of designated companies that have been given the authorization to go out in the world and buy public assets. And one of the companies that you'll all be aware of, because I've brought it up on the show many times, is called Veolia. They own in Britain. They own rubbish pickup, and they run train systems and trolleys. And they're actually the company with Alstom building the Israeli system over in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. But you find Rothschild all over this company. Now, here's the interesting thing. What they're doing right now is selecting a small group of companies that will buy up assets at fire sale prices from governments and take them over for next to nothing. Water systems, roadways, autoroute to south of France. When you're paying your money, it's going into one of these private companies. Or they're going to control through their political arm socialist structures, which General Motors is going to become a government-owned entity, which is socialist, socialist fascist, if you want, because the actions are fascist, but the ownership is socialist. And so what we've got here, and they own those governments, so everything is actually going to end up at the top anyway. Whether they're holding it through these small shell companies or they're holding it through governments they control, in the final analysis, private companies owned by individuals like you and I through our share structure are going to be eliminated, and the what's going to be left is a small group of people running either the governments that own these assets or the companies that control them. And that's what I'm seeing happening. And they're getting these companies at next to nothing. Now, whether you like General Motors or not, they still make a wonderful car called Opel. They still make Vauxhall. It's a wonderful car, and good engineering goes into it. Anybody who sat behind the wheel of a brand new Corvette can't even believe the engineering that went into that car. So the fact of the matter is there are some crown jewel assets that they're going to keep, and what they're going to do is the crap assets coming out of General Motors are going to be hived off. They're going to dump their pension requirements to their workers. They're going to start building in cheaper marketplaces, and they're going to abandon the United States, and the American public is going to bail out that decision. And that's exactly where we're going. Well, what's your take on it, Mohammed?
Darren, if I could just add in there, and Mohammed, go ahead. I think a lot of people, whether you're in the UK, France, America, Ireland, worked their butt off all their life, bring up a family and, whatever, been putting money into a pension fund, and they're all broke. I mean, Mohammed can reel off the numbers there. UK is an absolute disaster. I've never paid into any pension fund except, the ones you're obliged to pay into. I'd rather, trust my own investment skills, because these people have made an absolute disaster. You're seeing there's big investigations going on with the gold mint in Canada. They're missing gold. I was reading there, now it's coming up quite in a few places. All these guys that are holding paper gold on the COMEX, paper gold, the ETFs and whatever, go and try collect your gold. Go and try collect it. They will say, no, we can't help you. I mean, Daryl, the people that are holding all this paper gold can't collect it.
You can, but they're going to make you run through burning hoops.
There you go.
Go through the gauntlet of being beaten with pricker bushes and stuff, and by the time you get to the other end, you're going to be dragging yourself on the ground to collect your bullion. But
and this is very important for anybody out there thinking of investing in ETFs, the whole point of an ETF is that you're not actually allowed to take delivery of physical gold. The agreement in an ETF says that they will invest your money wisely through central purchases and sales of gold, but that at all times the gold remains the property of the ETF, and that if you want to cash out, you will have to sell your shareholding in the ETF. You basically get a shareholding in a vehicle that buys gold, but you are never allowed to take physical delivery. And we must warn people out there that if they've invested in an ETF thinking, if life does go bad on me and I want some gold, hey, I've got these shares in this ETF, I can actually go and demand it from them. Well, actually, you'll see from the paperwork that you can't. And that then causes us to raise another big question mark, which is, how do we actually prove how much physical gold they're holding?
We've talked about this, and remember I was telling you that they were doubling their sales, but then they reported their gold holdings, and I remember it was 600 million ounces of gold were in one of these funds, and they had doubled the sales for the period, for their 3-month period of reporting, and yet their reserve of gold had not increased. And I said to you, hold on here, they've doubled sales, and their reserve report says the same number. Now that was astonishing. This is about actually 3 years ago I reported that, but what Noel I think is mixing up here, and a lot of people do because they don't understand the structure here, is that a COMEX futures purchase is the right to demand delivery in the futures market, and you can, if you allow that to come to full of a maturity and you demand delivery, then on the COMEX futures market you can take delivery. But
COMEX is a different thing to an ETF, obviously. That's a financial futures exchange where there is underlying metal which is theoretically deliverable if you give notice for intention requiring delivery.
If they want to leverage gold and they don't want the physical bullion, and in fact they still trust anything that the system is doing, then you want to go into the futures market and buy a COMEX contract. But if you are in an ETF is basically a conversion of supposed a gold reserve into a tradable sort of security, and that security itself is not redeemable.
No, it's actually a share in a company which owns the physical gold.
That
what you're doing when you, although they call it an exchange-traded fund, its legal form is not a fund. Usually they are, in fact, a corporation, and you can buy and sell shares in a corporation. But technically what that corporation does is only purchase gold for investment purposes. And based on the value of the gold going up, your share price will go up, theoretically. But when you look at the fine detail of the paperwork, which I have, you will see that at no time does owning shares in that company give you any entitlement to the holding of gold which is held in the corporation's own name. At all times, the gold remains in the corporation's name, and that you're only allowed to buy and sell the shares. You're not allowed to demand physical product from the corporation.
Well, good.
And not only that, there's a government. Yeah, go ahead.
Darren, it's good that Mohammed corrected me. It was my mistake. I did mix up. I was basically talking about COMEX delivery, and it was my fault. I mixed in the ETFs out of over-exuberance there. And Mohammed is... I said, oh, I'm going to catch Mohammed here. But, you know, once again, Mohammed, absolutely spot on. What he said was absolutely correct. I meant to only focus on getting delivery from COMEX, where they have sold the next 15 years. The problem is, Daryl, all this extra gold, you know, we have 400 tons maybe coming out of the IMF to help them out, but there's a huge shortage. They could bring out 4,000 tons and we still don't have enough gold for shipment.
That's right, and what I'm seeing right now is if you go into your bullion dealer, and I know Switzerland still will allow you to buy physical gold, it's getting harder and harder for people to buy serious bullion these days. People are still selling it, and it's still available, and there's a premium, but there's going to come a point where the farce that physical gold purchasing is going to become evident. Now, here's what I'm saying. I'm not interested in a gold-backed monetary system, and, you know, Ken Parmentin up in Britain James Gibbs Stewart and the rest, they've made it very clear in their research that going to a gold standard is a terrible idea. It's just going to return the control to the same criminals we just got away from. But at the same time, in the short term, Mohammed and Noel, when the marketplace starts to really go up in flames here, to have a monetary metal such as silver or gold in your possession, at least to support your family's short-term needs or to retain the wealth that your family has, is certainly the right option to take. Now, it's not for a national financial system, but it certainly is for an individual's safety. Am I fair in saying all those things?
Well, I think, Darryl, the interesting thing is, you know, when push comes to shove, if we're looking at the strange scenario, which is a potential outcome of what's going on, whereby people lose faith in money, as has happened previously. The Weimark, etc., is examples of this historically. If we actually see that going on, what actually happened in the Weimar Republic was that, you know, somebody had some potatoes for sale. He was allowed to demand, you know, basically anything he wanted from anybody. So you could come down and I could say, well, now, you know, I do have this large basket of fruit and veg here, and you don't have any. I'd like your watch. I mean, the strange thing is that people went back into different forms of barter. Because the Reichmark became valueless, and they would exchange things of value. Interestingly, a secondary market did develop in silver and gold coins at that time. So some people who had silver and gold coins were able to find that they could exchange them for things that they required. But this is what will happen. You'll find yourself back in a barter situation, having to try and convince the person that you're dealing with that what they're getting from you will be of value to them if they want to trade it on. So if they're not going to consume immediately, which is what money's all about at the end of the day, I can swap apples with you for pears, we're both going to consume it immediately. But if I've already had plenty to eat today, I want to buy something tomorrow. So I just need a store of value. So that's where silver and gold came in, as these metals that would rust very slowly and could stay under the bed for decades. And you could go and buy your sandwich 2 decades later, no problem. This was the idea that people will return to that mindset once everything melts down in terms of the current currencies which are out there. How likely that outcome is and how soon that is always difficult to say. I would say that the likelihood of it has increased over the past 2 or 3 years enormously. And when we're looking at sovereign debts, sovereign bonds, government bonds from the first world countries, losing AAA status, at that point, you're looking at cash in hand that really isn't worth anything. And that's the reality.
Well, we're going to shift gears here because we're heading into the end of our talk here. I want to talk a little bit about what's been happening in the United States and where the bad guys are in relation to being exposed. Of course, we saw the recent attack or supposed attack of this 88-year-old man. And I mentioned to you, Mohammed, and we both laughed. I've got an 88-year-old father-in-law who shuffles from room to room and got a cane in one hand and you know, wearing a Depends on the other. You know, to keep himself from getting you know, messed up here, 88 years old. Now, supposedly this guy's the new the face of the new boogeyman world. And immediately upon seeing this report come out, the same day, I went right out and said, "This is a farce. It's a fraud. It's Mossad, or it's either that or they're taking advantage of it." But in every light, it stinks to high heaven. And then we see the elections here in Europe, of course, recently with Germany's growth and their in their far right party, which really is a protest vote saying that we don't like what we see and we're angry. We see that this is happening worldwide. Where are the crooks? I see them panicking, and I see them willing to bring out things like poisoning our food supply, which this rust virus that they're putting on wheat could do, or this new flu going around, which right now is not killing anybody, but if they bring out a bioweapon form of this crap, we might want to head for the hills. The point of the matter is that they're desperate, and it's not above them to use a Samson option to keep us all at bay. I'm wondering what you see, hate crimes wise, this attack on them, this nonsense, and all the rest of it. What do you see, Mohammed?
Well, as you say, Dal, they're obviously extremely desperate, and as a result, have now gone to much more serious mode of operation. We're very much used to seeing them, you know, spray painting swastikas on their own cars or swastikas on the synagogue door or on the Jewish cemetery. Even we've had before now rabbis stabbing themselves, and we've had a lot of Jews claiming to have been beaten up, mugged, and all the rest of it, and then, you know, security cameras watched, and it was all all a farce and a lie. This latest round is obviously trying to push it a bit further. An 88-year-old reminds me very much of when the powers that be chose Jack Ruby to go and shoot Oswald, because of course Jack Ruby at the time had been diagnosed with terminal cancer. He only had 6 months to live, so nobody had to worry about him talking. As long as we delayed the case for more than 6 months, he wouldn't be around to talk. So one assumes that this chap, whether or not he actually did it, I mean, there could have been an 88-year-old guy found holding a gun. You do tend to think that there may have been a couple of sprightly young men in the background pulling the triggers who were actually able to Reebok out of the building. Why an 88-year-old man would be chosen for a hit? He's certainly not a hit-and-run case, because he's not capable. I'd imagine that he may have just been some guy who was stood there, maybe taken for a day out by somebody younger who pulled the trigger and left the gun in his hand. Especially if he's completely adult, and I mean that in the nicest way, you know, if he's a few samosas short of a takeaway, then he wouldn't know what was going on either. Wouldn't be able to report it on anybody. But I doubt an 88-year-old man would be able to pull the trigger and shoot two people. I think pulling one's pretty miraculous, but two is just outstanding.
Well, Noel, you've got a take on this too. I mean, you've been watching this build up.
No, the guy is, apparently, you have to be skeptical. Some guy goes into the Holocaust Museum, apparently shoots a security guard. Why don't we see a video? This is the entry. Said, he just got past at the entry. Here's the video. I don't buy it for a second. And within 2 seconds, they had his name, his history, his website. In America, they were showing his younger photo. In Europe, they were showing his 88-year-old face, an old man. Don't buy it. I think we need to look at why the Holocaust Museum, which costs taxpayers millions and millions of dollars, what was going on that day. Now, we have several things going on at the Holocaust Museum that week. We have, they've now said they're going to release the Anne Frank diary, and as Daryl had up on his website during the week, with the ballpoint pen or which version, because we don't know which version it is. We also have several political non-Jewish personalities that were running shows, and were actually, there was a piece of theatre going on that particular night about the Anne Frank the Anne Frank diaries, a play they were playing that night. So they needed the publicity, but you know, where's the video? Same as in London, no videos, there's cameras everywhere. This is a very secure area, just to show the guy just got in. But I know I've read reports that the guy was on the someone shot on the second floor and whatever. Where's the video? As the days go by here, they'll manipulate the videos and the shows what they want. I don't buy into it whatsoever. Don't buy into any of these lies. I don't know why the American taxpayer has to pay millions and millions of dollars for these museums for the Jews. 60 million people were murdered during World War II, and yet I don't see any other museums for other people. Even if you go back to the Armenian massacre in 1517, there's no the Zionists or the Jews in America will not let that happen. Daryl, listen, when it comes to the question of the six million, and Mohammed is in the UK, so he can freely talk about it. We're in two countries that we're not allowed to freely talk about. I'm saying categorically, I do not believe that one gypsy or one homosexual or one communist was gassed in a gas chamber in Auschwitz. Now, I think that keeps me on the legal side of it, Daryl. I don't think a single gypsy was gassed during the so-called Zionist finance World War II. And this guy here, 88, don't buy it. Something fishy going on. They had the white nationalists on television. And I read one interesting blog, which is a possibility. I forget the guy that wrote it, come back to me, where he said these people are getting educated with the internet. And some people are going to lose it and go off on these one, you know, a single nut lone star gunmen, and they're going to take the law into their own hands. And this is playing into the hands of the criminal network.
Don't buy it. I don't buy that. Do you?
No.
That guy, that Skype guy you were talking about there, that he seems like he's a shill to me.
He's a writer, you know, he writes, I wonder for whom, who's paying whom, you know, who he's getting paid by and whatever. But I know, just in general, Daryl, they're trying to mix up white nationalists, black nationalists, 9/11 researchers, anti-Zionists, and they're all labeling us Jew haters and you know, anti-Semites and whatever, and they're trying to put us all in. But I mean, all you have to do is look at Glenn Beck or Hannity or O'Reilly. Beck is at the moment, he's calling 9/11 truthers nuts for you know, bad for America. Now, to a certain point, you know, I have to say, a lot of 9/11 truthers, if you go along with the Alex Jones line, you know, the Israel, Mossad, and the Jews, and some Jews had no part in 9/11, well, then you are bad for America. And I'm not talking, being trying to be nice about Glenn Beck. Screw him, I have nothing good to say about him. But anyone that thinks that Israel didn't have a part in 9/11, just look into Dancing Israelis, the art students, all the spies, and all Jack Abramoff, and the list goes on. And we have the biggest shill with the biggest audience, and we're you know, your numbers are, you know, 10 times my numbers, and your numbers are still, you know, 20 times less than this liar that's going on. And he will not accuse the people that did 9/11, the same people, Daryl, that murdered 34 Americans just, you know, 42 years ago, a couple of days ago, the anniversary on the USS Liberty. And these people are organizing our money system, they're running the drug businesses. But Daryl, this, you know, it isn't new. They ran the heroin, the poppy business in China 2 years ago for Rothschild. He even got the Queen's soldiers to go in and do the business for Rothschild at the time. We have more and more heroin coming out of Afghanistan. American troops. Why aren't people saying, why aren't America, well, how come, when did Congress declare war on Pakistan? I mean, Americans are all over Pakistan for Israel.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I'm sorry, Darren, I got a little bit, you know, I've had a couple of days off just to you know, kind of reflect on things, even kept off the internet, and, you know, read a couple of emails, read a couple of articles, posted one or two things, but I basically, in the last 2 or 3 days, stayed away. Just, you see, you know, if you're offline, does the world change? It doesn't change. Israel, Mossad were involved in 9/11. The Jewish Zionists run the banking system, and Mohammed and yourself gave me lots of education over the last couple of years on how this banking system goes, and we talked tonight about bonds and whatever. And people really need to wake up that this isn't going to get any better, and we're going to have to take a stand.
Well, I agree with everything you've said, everything. What's your take, Mohammed, before we call this a show?
Well, I think that we have a situation where, you know, people have to start looking at the modus operandi. This is the big issue here. These people have a history of daubing swastikas on synagogues. They've got a history of attacking themselves, claiming that neo-Nazis and right-wingers, etc., etc. We're not saying that we don't believe them because we're anti-Semitic or some of the nonsense like that. The fact of the matter is that we can demonstrate over decades, every year, many times a year, throughout the world, false incidents have been reported. So why should we believe this one is true? That's all I'm saying.
Well, I agree with that. Now, you know, ladies and gentlemen listening, you may be interested to note that that I will not be doing broadcasts on CII in the foreseeable future. Things have developed with my relationship with them that is forcing me to make a decision to go back out on my own, as I have many times in the past. That will change nothing as far as my efforts or my research. I'm feel pained that my South African audience is going to be hard pressed to find my work if they're not on the internet, and many of the Muslim listeners are not. So I'm sad to say that. However, the fight continues.
And, of course, as usual, we will always be bringing qualitative information to you, the best stuff I can find and suss out. And I want to thank both of you for spending this this hour with me on the French Connection, because you know something, the fight is far from over, although we've made incredible strides against this crime gang. And I really believe they're in trouble. It's not going to be a pain-free rejection of their system. And I urge everybody to do the things their family needs to have done to keep it safe, but at the same time keep their eye on the prize, and the prize is freedom. The prize is independence from this usury system, this lying and media system, this drug-induced money system that we have through heroin sales and the rest, and pornography and extortion and pedophilia and the rest of it. We can break free from it, and it's going to take an effort of everyone listening to this broadcast and beyond. So thank you, Mohammed, and thank you, Anil, for such a great file here.
Thanks, sir. Listen, I was getting into it because we never even mentioned this Jewish guy from France. A recording I sent you during the week where he's openly talking about pedophilia. We'll keep it for the next show. I'd also just like to, my last words there would be a small thought for our friends over there in Palestine that are being still ongoing slaughter. A new study out, Israel is practicing apartheid and colonialism. The French Connection, the Info Underground, and I'm sure Mohammed support the struggle of the Palestinian people in this ongoing massacre against them. Thanks, Darren, for having me on. Talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Mohammed. Ladies and gentlemen, until the next time, please be mindful of your family's needs. And keep the fight going. Keep the information coming out. Keep battling. Send these files everywhere. Share this information with as many people as you can. Until the next time, this is Darrell Bradford Smith telling you all, please, be well.